That's the original. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Joint Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery for May 11th. As you all probably realize, because you see some many familiar faces, that we in fact had scheduled for Monday a work session on Senate Bill 3225, and the gremlins of the electronic system made it impossible for our recording equipment to work, and we could not hold a public hearing without making a public record, so we deferred that meeting to today. So we are where we would have been, wanted to be on Monday morning, and the co-chairs and I, co-chair and I had talked about our approach on this work session today, and I think what we wanted to do was begin with the last meeting we had with the governor's staff on issues that we had discussed relative to a bill that would satisfy all of their legal requirements and also have the support of the governor's staff. So you have just been given a copy of the proposal on House Bill 3225 that was distributed to us in that meeting with the governor's staff. It looks like this.
Do you make copies for the public?
Okay. And let's, if you don't mind, I'd like to just go down this checklist. And we have another document called the Co-Chair's Preferred Options with the Government's Agreement, and that is a document that looks like this, and it also has page references on that. Just hold that handy, because we'll be referring to that as we go also. The colleagues, in concept, the first thing we discussed was the different proposals for names, and then there were some concerns about names, so we decided we would defer the actual naming of the organization until after we come to closure on the parts and pieces that the organization would have to reflect, the different organizational structure. The first thing that we talked about was the voting members, and it was put forward from the co-chairs to the governor's office and from the governor's staff back to us, but 11 voting members were no problem, and so if there is a question about voting members, or any of these configurations, we got to hear from the committee. So if you have any objections, you need to voice those as we go through. Six voting citizens would be appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And each one, and one each would be there from the commission, from the Water Resources, from Ag, from DEQ, from the ODF and W commissions, and from the Board of Forestry. And it would either be the chair or the designee. And there would be no second confirmation required from any of the commission members. It simply seemed redundant for us to stand on that amount of ceremony. But if you have an objection, we need to have it voiced. So Representative Cruz and Representative Jensen.
Yeah, thank you. And Co-Chair Ferrioli, I do have a problem there. And the problem is that as these commissions are put together, it's just kind of a give and take sort of process where between the Senate and the governor, I mean, it often comes down to that, where the governor may want this person, the Senate may want this person, say, well, we'll give you this person, and then you give us this person, and which is totally appropriate and the way this process should work. But then to say we don't need the same process for this board that in some ways may be more important than the ones they're coming from, theoretically would allow the selection of members from a specific slant, depending on who the governor was or what his predilections were towards this board, and I think there should be full discussion on those appointments also.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it won't be an ultimate heartburn for me on this issue, but I do generally agree with Representative Cruz on this. I think I'd feel better if it is. I think there are some reasons to assume that might be necessary or might be advantageous, so I would feel more comfortable.
Representative Morgan.
I would agree, and also for the double confirmation process, I think that we have all experienced with the commissions and the boards that there's a range of people that get appointed to them, and that we should be looking at particular candidates expertise and suitability at doing these kinds of things and be looking in that direction.
Representative Lennon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose if I hadn't had the opportunity to serve in the Senate and specifically on the confirmation, executive confirmation committee for a number of years, I might agree with my colleagues. Unfortunately, that process was less than pure at times. And some of the politics behind opposition to various of the governor's appointees was just that, and politics, and was very frustrating and at times very counterproductive and left a bad taste in a lot of our mouths over the appointments process and what we put citizens through who are asked to serve on these boards and commissions. And so for that reason, I have become one that has evolved into not being a strong supporter of appointments in general, but particularly dual appointments I could not support.
Everything naturally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the issues that was discussed when we were dealing with this issue was that we now have an expanded board, or we will have an expanded board at 11. If this would continue to be a five-individual board as we had in the past, particularly with the amount of funds that they'll be dealing with in the future, I think it made some sense for double confirmation. But with the expanded board, the chance of having an individual that could really throw the thing off, I think, are much, much less. And we did discuss the issue, as Representative Leonard presented, that it would be much more difficult, much more time-consuming, and really wasn't worth, as I said, with the expanded board, would we gain that much from it?
Representative King.
Thank you. I'd like to again speak against double confirmation. I really am very interested in having the person best put forward by the commissions themselves. I'm sure they'll talk among themselves, and those that have this responsibility talk about who they want to have there, who can serve there, who's going to take what responsibilities that they have for dividing up with different areas of responsibility. I think this gives them better flexibility to do that if we do not have double confirmation. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the issue? Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Definitely Representative Leonard. I mean, to assume the governor doesn't play politics in his appointments, I think is probably, anyway, I'll let that go. But the reality is, okay, the reality is, would this be a bit more cumbersome? Maybe so. But the point is that this is a very important group of folks we're putting together here, and I think the full discussion needs to happen. And this certainly would be in the mode of a cooperative venture between the executive and legislative branch, and I think it's appropriate.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps my comments are not necessary, but I don't, I hear what Representative Leonard and Representative Cruz were starting out with saying. And I think we have to recognize that we happen to have lifetime membership in an imperfect society. And, there's no way to get out of the political aspect of it. And that thing can come and go both ways. I'm not always supportive of things that have happened in the past, and I won't be supportive of things that happen sometimes in the future, but I don't believe that's a real valid argument. I don't want to throw out this process that has been in existence for a long time as far as appointments are concerned, because for some period I happen to have some personal problems with it. So
colleagues, I want to perhaps narrow the decision space a little bit and make things a little bit easier in terms of the choice that we have here. First of all, the six voting members would be citizens appointed by the governor subject to confirmation by the Senate and the chairs of state agency commissions. Now, some of them are selected by vote among the members and some of them are appointed in other ways. But if you decide in the Senate not to confirm the chair of the Board of Forestry, what other alternative do you have when the chair is the person that's being put forward to serve on the committee? So I guess I would suggest to you that Senate confirmation, if you don't like the chair of a committee, you don't have a whole lot of other choices, because the suggestion is it's the chair or the designee. And so the issue for us was we probably wouldn't see the chairs because they already go to an awful lot of meetings. It would probably be a designee of the chair, some other member of the Board of Forestry, just as an example. And it may not always be the same person that shows up at each meeting. It would be a person who has interest, obviously, somebody that can fill in, but maybe not the same person at each meeting. So I guess I would suggest to you that if that is an issue that we don't come to closure on right now, let's go on to the other issues. If that's the only issue we don't come to closure on, I don't think it's a fatal issue either way. Other members may feel differently. Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. And either way we resolve this, the thought of, for example, a different member of the Board of Forestry showing up to every one of these meetings, I have no comfort with that. We need to have permanent appointments to this committee for continuity.
Representative Cruz, my comment was not that there might be a different person at every meeting. My comment was that occasionally you might see a change in the designation, as Board of Forestry memberships change and so on. So I would hate to see us have to go through a confirmation process every time there might be a change in the membership of this, or in the designations by all these six agencies.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Duke.
I would expect that members of the Senate, especially the Rules Committee, which currently does most of the appointments, would take into consideration when anyone was being appointed to any of these boards or commissions that this person may very well end up serving on it, and take that into consideration when they're deciding whether or not they want them to chair of the Board of Forestry or Fish and Wildlife or DEQ or Ag, so that you wouldn't need to go through it twice.
Colleagues, let's move on to the other issues on the items of the agenda here, and we can come back to any issue we don't come to closure on. The current statute specifies 5 non-voting members. Judith, can you elucidate on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. If you will look in your working draft, beginning on page 5, line 23, you'll see.
Representative Jensen,
before we go that far, there is an editorial of a thing on tribal representatives.
Yes.
That needs to be federally designated treaty tribal representative, rather than just tribal representative, I think. The treaty tribes will have major heartburn with that if it is designated as treaty tribes.
Representative, your comment, your observation is well made, but Judith, rather than refer folks to a draft, just summarize for the committee what is the non-voting language so we don't have people shuffling through pages.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
As proposed.
Okay, as proposed, the non-voting members would become the director of the Ag Extension Service at OSU, and as needed, non-voting representatives of the following federal agencies: the U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Bureau of Land Management, Natural Resources Conservation Service, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Did you run through this one more time?
Sure. OSU Extension Director, Bureau of Land Management. Let me do that. That would be Oregon State University Extension Director, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Bureau of Land Management, Natural Resources Conservation Service, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the National Marine Fisheries Service.
And it would be five non-voting members, and there's six of six. So there's six alternatives that you found. Thank you. Senator Duke.
People need to be made aware that that's different than the sheet that they have in front of them. Currently, for example, the Governor's Natural Resources Office is a non-voting member.
Actually,
that lower. But it says in current statute, and
And that's partly
the EPA is an interim statute. I don't think National Marine Fisheries is an interim statute.
Okay, what is the current statute language?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The current statute language says that the non-voting members consist of the government's natural resources advisor, director of Ag Extension Service at OSU, as well as the director of the Department of Agriculture or designee. And then, in addition to those non-voting in-state members, you have then representatives of the following federal agencies. Those are three, the U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Bureau of Land Management, and Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Any questions about those non-voting and current statutes, Representative Cruz?
Yeah, first question, why the change?
Representative Cruz, we'll get to that in just a minute.
Okay.
Just slower down on the bullets. So
okay.
That's an important reason.
Okay, then there's one question on the wording of as needed. Could you define what that means? Because what we have currently as far as the technical advisors for this committee, which these folks are, it's a solid commitment, and it's the same folks coming virtually every week. Each agency designates a person to be the representative to that body, and so the as-needed part, I think, I have a little discomfort with.
Representative Cruz, can I ask you to hold the as-needed question for a minute? Because
Well, I certainly can. She just used the word, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But there's a point here that after we get through this, I'd like to come back and talk about the non-voting members and the as-needed question because they connect with each other.
Sure.
Okay. Then the no geographic or stakeholder language, we discussed in the committee what would happen if we tried to specify the geographic issues. East-west, it didn't seem to be as big a problem as east-west, north-south, or coastal. And then we added some other qualifiers about the Native American representation. And by the time we got through the list, the testimony from Mr. Hemingway was that it would be difficult if we specified all the geographic regions. So the feedback came back from the governor that if we tried to fill this thing up with particular stakeholders, we'd not have enough seats at the table because the stakeholder list is longer than the list of 11. So the request was that we delete the geographic or stakeholder language. I think we can come back to that issue because the co-chairs discussed that further, and there's a suggestion that we'd like to make to you about that. I don't think there was any argument about that whoever serves on this committee should have a direct interest in understanding natural resource issues and grant making. Those things are going to be asked of this committee on a daily basis, so that was important. The voting members would select the chair from among the voting members, and that would mean that no state agency or federal agency person could either be chaired. In other words, the non-voting members simply don't have a mechanism for election to chairmanship. And then this was a suggestion from the governor's office that referred to why the current voting membership would change, and that was that if we wanted to make this a truly independent entity with citizen representatives, that no governor's office or legislative members would serve on this board. So in other words, instead of arguing about where the governor's staff person was, whether they were chair or whatever, and then putting two or four or three legislators on this committee and then having bicameral, bipartisan relationships with it, the suggestion is that we just take all the state agency and state legislative members off the table in terms of election to this voting membership of the board. And then the director, we talked about the chairmanship and the director, how they get appointed. The director, with a suggestion from the governor's staff, was that the director be appointed by the governor subject to Senate confirmation, and that the voting members select their chair from among the voting members. And that was the compromise discussion that we had. In terms of other concepts that also were discussed in that meeting, first of all, the conceptual amendments that we'd already agreed to on the committee, and of course that was the Bullfrog Amendment, but it also is the appropriate legal fund language that's legally defensible, that meets the test with the State Attorney General's office, and that doesn't automatically get us into litigation. That was certainly the legal fund language that we wanted. And then the creation of the accounts, the splitting of the funds, the designation of DAC as a single agency, all were issues of agreement, so there was really no controversy over those already put forward by the committee. then the definition of capital expenditures has been a matter of some legal wrangling between a legislative fiscal, legislative council, and the state attorney general's staff. We finally achieved an acceptable definition that all parties have signed off on this afternoon, and it's been made available to our staff, and we'll circulate that for the committee's benefit to take a look at. The other thing has been the definition of capital expenditure had to be within the range of what the normal understanding of the term meant, and that projects and acquisition and associated costs probably can't fund the watershed councils or soil water conservation districts. In other words, they are not necessarily capital expenditures in the ordinary understanding of the word. We also needed to add a specific direction to the committee to establish goals and objectives, possibly even benchmarks for accomplishing the work of this grant committee, because we do not want to be accused of doing random acts of kindness across a broad landscape. So we have to, and I think it's a reasonable request, that goals and objectives be requested of the board, that we should direct the board to establish goals and objectives that clearly adhere to the Oregon plan. Then there was a discussion that we are in a transition period from the old Oregon plan to the new Oregon plan, and there is, if we reconfigure GWEB to some other configuration, there is an existing GWEB board. They need time to close down their existing operations and transit into a new operation and transfer their staff, their assignments, their open files, their accounting, and so forth. So we do need to accomplish a short and smooth transition from the current GWEB processes to whatever new entity is created. Then there was a recognition that if we changed the name, we'd have to reprint stationery, logos, letterheads, identification cards, and other things, and that we have to recognize that those do generate some increased costs, albeit probably the smallest cost that we'll incur for any of these projects. And then we need to explicitly mention the optional packages that were presented before the 10 different state agency budgets that came before our Subcommittee for Natural Resources that we've been hearing for since January. Because the optional packages, the program optional packages that were presented in the governor's budget that are specific to the Oregon plan, in fact, are not optional to the Oregon plan. They're optional to the agency budget. But they, in fact, are the commitment to the Oregon plan that would be made from the state legislature to make sure that we don't have a program that does not fully support the objectives in the Oregon plan and that is not legally defensible. So those are the other conceptual considerations that were brought before us in discussion with the governor's staff. I'll leave it to the committee to go through these things further, and to that end, the co-chairs did prepare an outline about the governor's proposals back to us, and we had some further discussions that I hope you'll be able to consider and accept that added a little detail and some information. And also, the governor, after this discussion was made, we had an additional communication that was provided for members, and that was that the governor's preference was to move the name from GWEB to OWEB rather than to from GWEB to Oregon Water Conservation Council. And then the other issue that was not discussed but felt very important by the governor's staff was that state and federal agencies could submit applications, but only as co-applicants with watershed councils or soil water conservation districts. And that, I think, was the principle that we already had discussed with this committee and the governor's staff. So I think what we have is a framework for a reachable a set of principles, and I'd like to go ahead and continue discussing that set of principles with the committee. If we get a buy-off on the principles, then we should move to the draft that has been prepared in anticipation of being able to close on all or most of these principles tonight. We have to undertake a couple of different issues. First of all, we have to understand that there are people all across the Oregon landscape that are waiting for a draft of this document so that they can review this document and be prepared to communicate their preference to their elected officials. And there are also folks in the saltwater conservation districts and watershed councils that are very anxious to get the draft in hand. Members of this audience and the working groups and all the other folks that are directly affected would like to see it. And the co-chairs are pressuring us for closure on budget issues, and all of us want to see this bill move forward. So I'll just go ahead and throw it open for discussion of the principles that were discussed at the governor's meeting, and if there are no great disconnects on that list, let's move to the second list, which contains a little bit of expanded language and also direct references to a working draft that you have. Have they been given the working draft yet?
Yes.
Okay. So any questions on this, Senator Duke?
Chair, I'm curious. You said that the definition that today all of the parties had reached agreement, and I was curious as to who all the parties were.
Senator Duke, it's my understanding that Jeanette and the Attorney General, as well as I'm sure consultation with Ken Rocco from Legislative Fiscal, worked out, and what you see in the working draft is the absolute latest language that the Attorney General, basically Richard Whitman, feels that he could defend in court on this issue.
Is there any question about closure on the definition? It was a sort of a tag team discussion, and of course the issues are what's legally defensible, and the definitions of capital expenditure are the main issues, and that drives what is fungible, what's not, what's administrative, not, what's backfillable and what isn't. And so all those things have been driving reallocations of budgets for all of the 10 state agencies that are in the natural resources pantheon. It's been quite an interesting and traumatic experience to get to the point where we have a definition that at least the Attorney General feels legally defensible. I think that's where we have to start. Amazing that it took this long to get here. So, Tim Morgan.
Just a point of clarification. The definition of capital expenditures in the DAS-1000 draft is the definition that CAF must provide.
We have the document itself, too. It's a one-pager, which is a...
And I will make copies when we have it. That's what it is.
It's in the working draft, but it's also appears
half paragraph of legislative language that came to my desk in passing today as I was moving upstairs to the drafting areas from the AG's office. We'll have that for you. Further questions? Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we talk about independent entity, I certainly support that. You know, when we first talked about having legislators as non-voting members on this, one of the things that was driving that concept was the continual disconnect we experienced during the last interim between GWEB and our committee. And we saw this as a way to have a firmer connection between the entities here. And I still think that's something that's fairly important, and from the same, in the same context, I certainly would not be adverse, I don't think, to having somebody from the governor's office still connected there also. I think that's also important. And I understand the need for independence, and I think that's vital, but I don't want it so independent that it's disconnected, and I'm afraid that that total separation gets us to a dangerous disconnection.
Naturally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cruz, we talked a lot about that. As a matter of fact, when it was presented to co-chair, and I raised the question, why do you want to separate both the legislature and the governor's office from that? And the discussion we had from that point on was that as you look at this committee and other committees, we don't have formal representations, nor I'm not aware of any other committees, quite frankly, that have formal representation from the governor's office or the legislature. I guess there might be some from the legislature, but the point is that we could all always attend the public meeting, or we could designate staff to attend those meetings, and so it's not that we're trying to disconnect. It's just the perception of the public, I think, and the Watershed Association that this is an independent group, and it's kind of like, as I've told many of you, it's kind of like letting a teenager take the car out for the first time. I think this board has matured to the point where we have to have some confidence, and we have to let loose both from the governor's office and from the legislature and let them work their way through this thing. And that certainly doesn't mean that we don't have oversight. We still will be meeting and asking them to come to our oversight committee in the interim. We will be making recommendations on their funding periodically. So I don't see it as a disconnect so much as I see it as just allowing them to mature and grow and get in kind of board.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Follow-up. I appreciate, Representative Nutley, everything you're saying, and it's not that I disagree with that. And the reality of it is all of us could show up to every GWED meeting that we're supposed to. These are certainly public meetings. And chances are some of us will be there when we can. It's not like we have nothing else to do, as well as folks from the governor's office will be there. But there is a matter, the reason we made the legislators non-voting is constitutional, but one of the reasons to have them non-voting is the perception that they are basically advisory to the committee, and there is a purpose of having them there with standing that I think we can't really get to that level of connectedness without that being there.
President Green, I think the point that you made is well made, but when the suggestion came back about removing the governor's office membership and the legislative members, what I focused on was who are the 11 voting members? And the 11 voting members, in fact, are citizens that will be appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, or they are citizen members of commissions. So the department, departments or the Board of Forestry, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission, the commissioners that serve for DEQ and Department of Ag and Water Resources. So, in fact, as you look around the table, the only voting members you'll see there will be citizen members. And I thought that was a fairly powerful statement about letting this thing move out from under the governor's imprimatur, which was one of the issues that we thought was important to give this survivability, to let this thing move forward and be sustainable through the year 2015. It had to move out and be seen as something that wasn't at the direction of anyone particularly, but that the citizens would be looking at and listening to other citizens that are putting forth grant applications. And remember, this committee or this commission or this board's work is fairly narrow. It's to look at grant applications and make decisions about ranking and make decisions about connecting those applications to the Oregon Plan objectives. And that's what it's about. It is not the oversight committee. That's this committee. It doesn't have the functions of governance. It has the function of soliciting, ranking, and making recommendations for funding for applications for the funds that were created by Measure 66. So I thought it was a good thing.
Well, it has the function of basically implementing direction put forth by the executive branch and the legislature. So the connectedness is there. And I guess I am looking for some assurance. I mean, those of us that sat for 2 years on that committee, we spent a lot of time dealing with issues that if we would have had that connectedness, we wouldn't have had to deal with, because there would have been full knowledge being passed back and forth. And I think it's important that there be understanding between the Oversight Committee and the GWEB Board. Then I'm not sure how else we get that there unless we're participatory.
Before I take Representative Lundquist's question, let me refer for a moment to a question that Representative Cruz asked earlier, and that was the definition of what is as needed. And remember when we looked at knocking off the governor's office and legislative members, that took the GNRO and the Ag Department members off. We also talked about not having a connection with the Environmental Protection Agency or National Marine Fisheries Service, and those are two organizations and entities that are uniquely concerned with fish recovery and clean water. So as needed meant if we had a need for an interface, that those agencies might be important. We don't know that there might be other agencies from time to time that might be added by the group as an advisory in an unofficial capacity. But we wanted to make sure as needed was broad enough for them to add other non-voting entities for advice if they thought they needed it.
Absolutely. GWEB, as it currently exists, has two advisory committees to help them move through the grant process. Are those committees still existing and separate from this?
My understanding is that nothing that was created by GWEB would necessarily translate, okay, that this commission would, or board would have to make its own connection.
Okay.
Representative Lundquist, did you have a statement or a question?
Well, yeah. I guess the question for Representative Cruz, not having sat on this committee when you were going through what I would say some very tough growing pains. Is part of the problem the fact that this was a brand new program, the Oregon Plan, how we were creating that? Is that part of the reason that maybe you're, and I know it's genuine on your part, that there needs to be that connectedness that maybe now that we've matured a little bit, might not be not quite so critical? That's a question for you.
Well, and I appreciate that, Representative Lundquist. I think we're still brand new. And I think this is such a dynamic process we're in that for a good period of time it's going to continue to be brand new. And we need to be able to be flexible where we need to be flexible. And what happened with us during the interim was we bogged down and things got stalled. And especially when we're dealing with some things that are rather time sensitive, I don't think that is totally appropriate. If there's a way to keep that from happening, to keep from bogging down on funding or intent or these other things, because truly, when we're talking about riparian type projects, I mean, they are incredibly time sensitive, and you know, a delay of 3 months kills a project for a season, and so you know, we need to find a way to be able to facilitate in a timely fashion.
That's the Representative Cruz's response. I think we bashed heads for a while. And I think the issue that Representative Cruz brings up is evolutionary. It's a new concept. But the whole idea that of legislative oversight is not one that's a comfortable relationship between branches. Legislative oversight of an executive process essentially is not a comfortable relationship. I don't know if it was ever intended to be. Certainly the branches are adversarial. And definitions require it wasn't always comfortable, and I doubt that it will always be comfortable. The fact is that this committee or another one designated by the legislature does have oversight responsibility for the way the Oregon Plan is implemented. That doesn't change by designating a new entity to look at grant applications. And I guess I would expect it to be not always a smooth path. Yeah. But we, you know, the facts that we need to face, and one is that we cannot create an agency that works under the executive branch that isn't in the executive branch. We haven't figured out a way to do that yet. So that's one of the realities.
Well, the reason, Mr. Chair, I sense a frustration, although they don't have to improve, and I understand that. I was just wondering, you know, maybe we can move beyond that. I favor not having, I want to have a connection, but I want to have it more unofficial than official, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I'm just wondering whether that's possible.
Well, it was never the intent to have legislative oversight of whatever this critter's called. Just like we didn't want executive oversight of this, we want a connectedness there that is probably somewhere in between these two things. And this isn't a fall on my sword issue, but I think it merits some more discussion to figure out how we connect the various components in this process so we don't run the risk of the problems that we ran into last interim.
Actually, the committee does have oversight responsibility for this and all other things connected to the Oregon plan, but what's unique about this is because of the author, there's no authority in the legislature to limit the funds. Typically what we've done in legislative oversight has been use the budget and the executive board as mechanisms to at least fact check and make a responsibility and accountability a feature of the oversight. In this case, because of the strict limitation that's contained in the Measure 66 language, I don't believe the legislature can limit funds appropriated to the agency. That was one of the things that caused us to have a good hard look at the legal definitions and the other processes involved in Measure 66.
Mr. Chair, which speaks volumes to the need for a connectedness, because even with the power of the purse that we had last time, we're still disconnected, and we don't have that compelling reason this time. So, you know, the whole goal of this is to make sure that all parties involved, no matter where they sit, whether they be legislative, executive, or this new creation, are in full contact with each other, and everybody knows what everybody else is doing and what intent is. And somehow I don't think what we have here quite gets us there.
Okay, Representative, to get me back to my comfort level are two features. One is that the committee does have legislative oversight of the actual implementation of the Oregon plan, not limitations of expenditure, but how it plays out on the ground. And the other thing is that we do have the legislative authority to limit the agency budgets in the larger picture, not to limit these expenditures, but the agency budgets overall. So I would suggest to you that agencies are still going to pay attention to the legislative direction in budget notes and budgets and in oversight activities, just as they would at any other time. Representative Thompson, you had your hand up.
Well, can we go anywhere we want on this?
Absolutely. As long as we end up with a bill at about...
I'm a little bit concerned over something that maybe Jeanette can help me out here, and that's in the way the money's handled. And there seems to be some misunderstanding, of how the money is handled if the funds are transferred to the sub account and it channels through DAS. Is there anything in here that says DAS has to put that money into GWEB or OWEB or any amount? Is this money going to be handled by Ways and Means? How's this channel?
Let me call Ken Rocco.
Mr. Chair, members, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. Representative Thompson, that would be taken care of in the budget. If there would be a direction, an allocation of those resources to the Department of Administrative Services with direction to provide those monies to whatever granting institution you create.
Mr. Rocco, is that a constitutional mandate? Is that ordered? Act of the transfer ordered and the designations, if we make this designation law and pick this agency, is it a constitutional mandate those funds be transferred to that agency?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that the constitutional mandate is, would be in Oregon law that would be created that kind of a transfer.
Optional?
Mr. Chair, no. I mean, yes. It's the only thing that is mandated is that it go to a single agency, which we do by sending it to DAS.
I think I'm having a little bit of trouble wrestling with this. Does that mean that the money, okay, if that DAS, that's all, you've already fulfilled your obligation. That means that that money then becomes part of the fund, general fund, more or less, to be handled by Ways and Means. There's nothing that says that $1 has to flow into salmon recovery.
Would you care to respond to that, Mr. Rocco?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, the way this is intended to work and will work given the budget would be that the money would flow to DAS. DAS would split the money into two accounts because these are lottery funds, and DAS is already distributes lottery funds in that fashion. And then there would be, in each agency budget, there would be a limitation provided for a certain amount of funding from that sub-account, the restoration protection sub-account. There would be the amount for capital expenditures would be distributed to whatever board, commission, council that is created in this measure, and then that particular institution, that particular structure, board, or commission would have the authority to distribute those monies for projects. The Department of Administrative Services would not touch the money after it was delivered to that board or commission, and it would have the total authority to distribute that in any way it saw fit within the budget that was provided by the legislature.
And I guess there's a point of concern that was drawn up, and I'll let other people then. Are we going to take any testimony on this? I guess the question.
Well, the intention is to get a draft
covered.
So that at our next work session, we can actually move the bill. And at that point in time, it would be appropriate to take testimony and do any of the normal processes that we would normally do anyway. I'm trying to. I can do is come to closure on concept. If there's a couple of areas that need further explication, or maybe there's a bit of a disagreement, I don't think that should prevent us from moving forward on a draft that other people can comment.
Chair, I'm a little bit concerned that we're getting a little bit in front of the cart for the horse. If we make agreements on concepts, which I think we have to a degree, we've got here in rough concept, I don't want to go any farther into that until after I have other people to testify and then make the final agreement. You see, I'm worried that we're pushing too far into this process because there may come testimony that may change my opinion. At this point right now, I can say that the concepts look reasonably well, but once the public comes forward, then I'd like to make my decisions rather than push it too far at this point.
For some counsel, let me try and address that. If we have rough closure on this set of concepts and staff and legislative council have put those together using the page references from the boilerplate that we've already had presented to the committee, and we hand that draft out to the committee members, we've not adopted any language. We've just given somebody outside this room or outside this process or beyond the sound of our voices a draft that they can mark up to bring back. And I think that's not going beyond just the conceptual approvals that, hey, let's look at this stuff on paper and what does the language actually look like. So I'm hoping that fits the context that you're going for. Representative Dean?
To move a little farther along the line, I think that, you know, what is here with the dirt work draft probably is something that we've been working on for a long time. I think it is something that, you know, we'll meet with the governor, you know, would agree with. I think it probably is, you know, close, and it's not what everybody wants. I think it might be close enough to consensus so that we could, you know, get this out to people so they could say, well, this is really something to work on. This is something we can all look at. And I would be interested in, and seeing, you know, what the testimony was, what, you know, whether there was a lot of consensus, whether there was a lot of heartburn, whether there was a little bit of heartburn, you know, where it was. But I'm very supportive of what I see here.
Alverson Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where we're going here. If this question is not appropriate now, just tell me so. You, when you read through these bullets here, and you said the plaintiff's fifth one down should have interest in and understanding natural resource issues and or grant making, everybody agrees with that. If I read that, I might read that, but you could have an interest in understanding of grant making. And these people on here, I would hope they have just natural resources, and they have both, that's fine, but they better have a natural resource base. And I may not be reading this right, but that's a concern I have out of that.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lundquist, I'm not sure that grant writing was a really just some wordies I got. I want to come back very briefly to what Representative Cruz was referring to. I think we all learned from that. We kind of learned how our oversight group should be operating and where our parameters were. Had a better understanding of maybe the intent of the legislature, and we have to find that. And I want to say it can be really, really hard, in my opinion, to work with us as a board. Ed and I came down to Coos Bay and met with me in my house, and we called Ted, and we, you know, there's a lot of things to work through. It's a new concept. They weren't used to an oversight committee, and plus they had an expanded funding, and I think we've learned a lot on both sides, and we'll move forward with that. To me, Representative Cruz, the better way to address your concerns is to give better direction as to what the legislature really has in mind and what those grants should be used for. And I think if we could do that and define that better, I think an awful lot of the problems would fall away. And so I'm hoping that as we work through this process here, we can also accomplish that goal as well.
Did that answer your question? And Senator Duke?
Comment on the process that you... I'm of the understanding that we are up against the timeline to move this bill.
Under constant pressure from the co-chairs and the leadership to move a bill. That is correct. We have not been told. But in fact, we're probably beyond the court case. We're operating now on the indulgence of the leadership and the Senate and the House.
If I'm anxious to move something, mostly because every time I go home and talk to more watershed council, they express increasing concern. I mean, mine aren't in the valley, and only express run slow up to where I live, and they're not current with what we're doing. And I believe that if we adopt concepts tonight and then get them drafted and then come back with the draft to circulate, we'll probably be here another week. If we really want to do justice to input. And we have people here who are with us almost daily, and that's wonderful, but there are dozens of watershed councils out there that stand to be dramatically impacted by what we're doing who would deserve an equal opportunity to get this faxed or mailed or something to send in their comments. And I'm just concerned that we've killed a little gerbil, you know, in a cage. And we've been running round and round and round on this, and I think that we've heard most of their...
I share your concerns. I feel like I've been looking at the same mesh going by the window for a while, too. But let me regress for a minute. On Monday, under the able leadership of Co-Chair Messerly, we were to move through this outline. And the fact that she kicked a plug inadvertently underneath the disconnected our sound system put us back a day. However, what the co-chairs had intended was that we would come to closure on concepts as nearly as possible. And in anticipation of that, because of the stuff that we brought before the governor, we discussed before we took it up there. and everybody knew what we were going to go up there with, and we were hoping we'd come back with something that was serviceable. I was quite pleased and surprised by the amount of overlap there has been and the cooperativeness of the discussions that we've had with the governor's staff. We do have a draft, a working draft, that's in everyone's possession. I think everybody in the audience has a copy now, and the committee all has a copy. So the question is, do we move that out as a document for concept and then come to closure or final redirection for anything that we'd want to see as a draft? We put that out to folks, and yes, it probably will take us a while to get information back. But remember, whatever work product we produce here has to go to Ways and Means. So it would go, if we adopted, we had the perfect document before us today. It would not have any allocations of dollars in it. The committee would vote the bill to as a referral to Ways and Means, likely full Ways and Means, and then likely subcommittee Ways and Means for Ag Natural Resources, where we would sit down again with the co-chairs, the governor's staff, and other people that are engaged and connected with this issue, and do the allocations that were necessary with the program option packages, which turned out not to be optional, but the feathers and guts and heart of the Oregon plan, put those in the bill, move those out of the subcommittee, back to full Ways and Means, and back to this committee. So whatever we see here, we will see it again. And that would be the opportunity in that loop to have the other stakeholders get their commentary ready for public hearing on that final bill as it moves through again. Rick Ben Thompson has a question.
Well, I'm a little bit worried that we're circumventing the process by making all these pre-plans. I'm satisfied this is the document here that we have. This is the Dash 1000 Amendment. But if there are people who have dissatisfaction with those, they should be able to draft amendments and come in and vote them up or down, the same as always, in the normal process.
And I would expect that to happen. I would expect that we will have those discussions.
Now, well, and whether I say yes or no in concept isn't important. This is close enough. Let's get on with it. Let's get it go forward. Let's see what comes out of the public. Let's see what comes out in amendments, and let's vote. You get this thing done.
Representative Morgan had her hand up for a while. Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to ask you a question. What I'm trying to do is clarify how the money is going to flow in this thing. The money will flow from gas to the Watershed Enhancement Board. And so what will happen is some Ways and Means Committee will say X amount of dollars goes to the Watershed Enhancement Board for the purpose of putting projects on the ground for the Oregon Plan. And then at the point that money passes to the board, what exactly is the oversight? Is it that there's an audit at the end of the process? Is there a possibility for budget notes in how that money is spent so that there's checks throughout the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, there are a couple mechanisms that could be used. Could be budget notes to request or require that board to report to the interim committee, this committee, and to the emergency board to keep track of what's being distributed in the form of grants. There could be budget notes included that would request that a certain amount of money be used for certain kinds of purposes. As long as the total amount is allocated to the board and the board's able to spend that money within the biennium, there's not an issue about direction provided to that board.
Should notes be construed as limiting the spending of the funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, no, those are just directions to an entity to spend the money. The only constitutional problem, I think, and Jeanette Holman can speak better to that than I, is that you just cannot restrict the board from spending the amount of money that is generated from the 15% of the lottery proceeds. You cannot say that you can only spend 10% of that money this biennium. All 15% is going to be spent this biennium, and there's no intention on anyone's part to limit that expenditure.
And then am I correct also in assuming that because it is Measure 66 money, that the board would have to be audited at the end of a budget cycle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, there is an audit. In fact, every agency that receives money under the language of the constitutional amendment has to provide an audit to the next legislative assembly on the use of those funds. And so that board would, as well as any other agency that receives money from Measure 66.
Further questions? Colleagues, there's a what we're doing here is trying to make sure that we figure out an opportunity for the concept to move forward, for a bill to move out of this committee, to move that bill to Ways and Means, to do the allocations that we'll do in Ways and Means, which is practically a subcommittee of this committee. But it's my feeling that folks on the rest of this committee will want to see how those allocations go together. So we would be asking for permission to bring the bill after the Ways and Means Subcommittee is finished with it back to the committee, so that if anybody had other considerations, they could be made at that point in time, even to the point of taking amendments from the members on it, and then move it forward to the floor from there. And so the point I'm trying to do here is to make sure that if you have amendments that you want to offer, there's an opportunity to offer the amendments, rather than running it directly from Ways and Means to the floor. We'd have to do that with permission of the speaker, but I don't think that would be a problem given the fact that we want to have as much support for this thing as we possibly can. Representative King.
Point of clarification, just help me out here. So are you saying that we could adopt the work draft now, have that go to Ways and Means and Natural Resources Subcommittee be reviewed, come out of Ways and Means, and then come back to the committee and use that for the hearing? Or
if we adopt the working draft now, it needs to go to drafting. It needs to be finally drafted. And then it would come back to this committee on Thursday for final adoption.
Thank you.
And the point is, I think it isn't very much time to get people to give us feedback. The folks in the audience that have a copy, it may be easy for them to comment, but there are people beyond that scope that wouldn't have time in a day to make commentary.
Yes. Representative,
you have a question? All right. I just want to speak to Representative Thompson's concerns that I think what we're trying to do is to continually hone this thing down to where we can try to find a consensus. And I wouldn't view any votes we had if we go to a voting process here tonight as being a commitment that you couldn't vote differently when we got the thing finally packaged in the final form. I think we're just trying to work this thing together where we can find out where people are at. We have never really, since we've had the meeting with the governor's office, the two meetings with the governor's office, we've never had an opportunity to sit down with the committee and discuss the work we got done. I think we made tremendous progress toward bringing it to an end.
Could I ask for a 5-minute recess, just some of us to get together and talk for a few minutes, because this is fairly important.
Is that reasonable? Chair declares a 5-minute recess. Please resume your seats.
We've been here too long.
We have no idea.
Colleagues, we're gonna try to conclude the program that the co-chairs designed for this evening. And here's how we will proceed. When we received the draft from the governor's staff, co-chairs sat down and discussed this with staff. And there were a couple of things that we thought from the discussions in our notes that would expand some of the concepts marginally. So we took the liberty of producing this document called the co-chair's preferred options with the governor's agreement. We're going to go through those 12 points, and we're going to ask folks for objections on those points, and if they have an objection on any of the points, it will be noted. We're not going to ask for a vote, just to note where objections might occur. And then at that point, we're going to fully distribute the draft working document that the Legislative Council has produced, which is their best effort at a faithful reproduction of the co-chair's preferred options. We're going to circulate that. We're going to instruct the committee staff to go ahead and do the draft edit and bring back that draft for our consideration on Thursday. At that point in time, if there's commentary from the public that's here this evening or commentary from the committee or even conceptual amendments, that would be the time to present those. And at that point in time, we will hopefully be moving forward with the draft bill. But let's go through the items 1 through 12 on the co-chair's preferred options, and I assume that the public has been given a copy of this document. Has this been made available? Yes, something there. The first item was the membership of the body. Again, it was the 11 voting members, 5 commission and board members, and this draft reflects the rejection of the governor's staff and the other constituent parties that were included in the other statute, plus the 6 public members to draw from. And then the co-chairs thought that the open-ended, no geographic designation didn't give us reasonable assurance that people from all areas of the state would be represented. So we looked at the 5 geographic regions, and that came from where, Judith? Wasn't that the watershed map that we used?
Correct, Mr. Chair. And as a matter of fact, though, in the working draft, there is now more generic language just saying that all the geographic regions of the state shall be represented within the 11 voting members.
And then there was a discussion among the co-chairs that we have asked the tribal representatives to be involved and engaged in all the activities relative to salmon restoration. So we thought that a tribal representative would be necessary on this board. Then we also, on the non-voting members, talked about deleting the Department of Agriculture, which was under the current law, and then using the as-needed kind of concept to add National Marine Fisheries Service and US EPA, because those folks do the clean air, clean water, and fisheries recovery. So non-voting federal agencies as necessary, and those folks would be advisory to the committee. Again, the body would be appointed by the governor with the Senate confirmation of public members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative?
Were you asking if there were concerns as we went along?
Yes, if you have objections, please just note that you have an objection and what the nature of your objection is.
Well, I'm going to do that verbally, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just one concern there.
Okay.
And I said before that I did have a concern with geographic regions. I feel extremely strongly we need to make sure that Eastern Oregon is represented. And I think that the GWIB districts, if we're going to districts, probably is the best one. But that there are two that are from the eastern side there, and we have the vast majority of, quote, the critical salmon habitat on the west side, as well as the population. And Portland has hugely expensive issues, in their area. And so if we have two of the publics from the east side, and then probably 90% of the time we probably have, and I agree with Representative Jensen in terms of the tribal treaty, tribal representations, that conceivably then we could have 50% of the membership of the publics from the eastern side. And whereas I understand that, the tribal interests are not the same as people who are on the east side, there are differences there. Certainly there are some similarities there as well. So, I did think that it was appropriate. The language that's in the work draft, where regional representation was taken into account and was critical was probably the best versus, you know, specifying here. Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
I'll take just putting some generic language in there about geographic representation isn't good enough. I think that we need to define further what we're talking about with geographic regions, and I think that it would be very helpful if there was a map of the watershed region circulated, because I do think that those watershed regions very reasonably reflect a good way to represent the makeup of the board, and it also merges in with the existing watershed council structure.
So noted, and we'll ask for that map to be circulated. And your objection to the geographic regions is noted. You know, we've wrestled with this. The Klamath region is pretty important for a whole bunch of different reasons. The best salmon habitat left in the country in Oregon is up along the John Day. It's the one that has the best and strongest and most wild fish running. The uplands on the Willamette Valley certainly are tremendous spawning areas, and the coastal streams are incomparable. And, you know, you could argue very strongly that 70% of the population is in the lower Willamette Valley at the confluence of the Columbia and the Willamette. Then there's North and South Coastal. I mean, you get geographically region to death. So the point is what we're trying to do is make sure that we've got people that want to serve and that we can get to go to all these machines from these areas. So the draft says all geographic regions. The co-chair's draft says five geographic regions. Will circulate that map and note that for the record we will have further discussions on the geographic representation. Co-chair Mitchell.
I was just going to point out that I'm not sure it's very workable. Is the draft, as the staff said, would be the geographical representation would be from the 11 voting members. I think you're not going to be able to ask those commissioners to consider that as they're making their appointment. And so it would seem to me that the only place that you can effectively address that is with the six public members. So.
Emerson Morgan?
I mentioned that. My thought would be to have the five geographic regions be represented by five public members, and then the tribal member would be outside of that.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? Okay. Did I hear a consensus just locked here in the committee? Five geographic the public members would be from the five geographic regions plus one tribal.
And my understanding was that we were just acknowledging what concerns were, that we weren't necessarily consolidated.
Okay. Okay. And grasping at straws there, so. We do have noted for the record that Representative King has a question about the geographic representation.
Others, Senator? Others might join in that concern. And that's a question. If somebody raises a concern, do you want several? If there are others that would join him in that?
Actually, if others share the concern, it would be helpful to know where people are.
So do I.
Okay.
Always there, concern with others. That's why I made the original amendment to not use geographic, so that has changed.
And I think folks from any geographic region of the state have the same question. We all feel we've been underrepresented on every committee. Doggone. All right, shall we move on? The body appointed by the governor was Senate confirmation of public members. Any objections?
Yeah.
The body of the committee designates its own chair. No objections. The voting mechanism, this is something that was discussed by the Representative Nesserly, and he brought this concept as a result of having spent years on bank boards. And so I'll let him explain how the eight voting members are required to take action. Representative Nesserly.
And the thought I had was that if you've got two or three people on a board this size that have a problem with a grant, there's probably something wrong, and it should go back and be reconsidered. And so we struggled, how do you go about that? Should it be a supermajority? But then we thought that would be a vote present, or or of the full board and that kind of messy. So what we finally decided was that you have to have 8 members of the board there to have a quorum. And then any time you have 3 no votes, the application should go back to the.
Now, there were 2 side discussions. One was that a consensus organization probably will fail because you've always got one person that might not go along, and that kills an application or a process. So we did want to have some kind of a voting process. The other thing was that if 3 folks have a problem with a grant application, it shouldn't kill the application. It should be reworked. It should be referred back to the Watershed Council or Soil Water Conservation District with some specific objections that people had so they get a feedback opportunity so they could learn from that process and then maybe resubmit the application. But 3 folks who dinged an application, that would take it out of the process and send it back to the applicant. Senator Nelson.
Is the 8 voting members, is that going to cause a problem if you have a quorum and you end up with a 4-4 vote? It would be additional to go to a 7-9.
That's more than 3 no's.
So. You'd have more than 3 no's and send it back. Okay.
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 Any other questions? Objections? I represent Martin.
I was wanting to go back to the members of the board, and on the OWEB, GWEB, OWC, some qualifications for membership, being an understanding of National Association of Underground Picking, is it intentional that that language doesn't appear on the kosher?
No, I think that it was an oversight, not an intentional deletion. It reflects itself in the draft that you will look at, but it didn't make it to this outline. But there was no intention that these folks would not have at least an understanding of natural resource issues, and because they are going to be engaged in ranking grants, they should have some idea about grant processes.
To echo Representative Lundquist's concern that whatever else we do, we get people that know natural resource issues.
I'm not going to
And I think the draft does. Judith, does the draft reflect the knowledge of natural resource issues?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, on page 5 of the working draft, starting on line 6, you'll see the 11 voting members of the board shall be knowledgeable about natural resource issues. It has or grant making, but we do have a note there that perhaps the or grant making may come out of there. So that is something.
Okay. Is that objection about or grant making is noted for the record? Representative Messerly?
Did we get Representative Jensen's concern about tribal representation?
No, I don't think we have yet there, but I think Judith is aware of it. It needs to be a treaty tribe.
Okay, and then the issue for tribal representation, it would be a tribal representative having treaty rights.
Yes. Treaty rights, yeah.
Okay, we were on the item number 5. The transition language would allow for the transition from the current GWEB processes because there are grant applications in processes and applications pending and projects for which funding has been committed. Those projects would need to go forward under any new configuration, and there would need to be time for the appointment of new board members and the close down and transfer of the files and so forth, of staff reassignments from GWEB to whatever entity. So that would be the transition language. Also, there's some transition involved in moving from where we are in the Oregon plan. Mr. Co-Chair?
I'd like clarification of Jeanette. I see in the draft language it talks about all 6 of the public members should be appointed before they could start serving. I'd like a discussion of why, as they're confirmed, they can't start serving. It could really delay the process if you have to wait for all 6.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nesley, Jeanette Holman from Legislative Council. The governor must make his appointments on or before October 1st, 1999. he could make them earlier, or, but, so the latest they would go before the Senate for confirmation is during the November Senate convening for confirmation. This was a request of the governor's office that they all take office at the same time, and that's why that language is in there.
It's going to give me abiding pleasure to rule the co-chair's question out of order. We're not working on the draft, we're working on the concept. So.
He just gave even for when I kicked him out of the room here a couple of weeks ago.
You're still ahead, Jim.
Payback can take for a long time, but I remember everything. Okay, and
thanks for having this meeting.
Item number the sixth is the body name, and the choices are Watershed Enhancement Board or Watershed Enhancement Commission. The draft, I believe, reflects board. The seventh item was the executive director to be appointed by the governor with Senate confirmation. Any objections?
Another discussion, and I come to singing the same song over and over here. If we are talking about a true disconnect, this certainly doesn't speak to that. And I guess because even though it has Senate confirmation, this is the governor's person running this thing, so which is appropriate for the executive branch. But my comfort level there is really diminished by not having legislators as non-voting members. I think that's where we get balanced.
I agree in concept that the balance is the issue. The practical issue is that if we're going to hire an executive director, and that's exactly what we're talking about doing here, there's a pretty short list of somebody that has the communication skills, the knowledge, the ability to do the grant applications, rank them, prioritize them, help the committee members understand their role, understand the Oregon plan, and so on and so forth. And so the idea that we would do that in a neutral process that didn't involve the executive branch was a stretch for me. So I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you in concept, but in real practice, we're going to have to advertise, find, interview, do a job description, and hire somebody that has the skill set, and that is an executive function. Richard Leonard.
And then what is the relationship between the executive director and OWEB after confirmation?
Primarily one of facilitation. Representative, the executive director is not a, is the executive director a voting member? I don't think so. No, the executive director is not a voting member.
I understand that, but do they have some authority over the executive director?
The executive director, I don't think the job description has been written, but in my way of thinking, the executive director's responsibility is to make presentations to the board, to facilitate their meetings, to keep the appropriate records, to make sure that the accounting as necessary gets done and reported to the appropriate people. It is not a position of independent authority necessarily, but it is certainly the executive director fills all the functions of executing the will of the board or the commission.
But the executive director serves at the pleasure of whom?
The governor. And remember that we haven't figured out a way to create this thing outside the executive office. So. Question for Tim Stark.
Yes, thank you. I guess to follow up on the letter, that means that that the executive director is not under the OWEB, they're under the governor. And so that the governor is their boss, right?
That is correct.
That's where we're going. I would agree if that's what it's true.
Okay. There's an objection noted then that the executive director serving the governor or at the pleasure of the governor is a question that you an objection. And the alternative would be for the executive director to serve at the pleasure of the board. Those are the two configurations that we have in different commissions in Oregon. Representative
King. It's my understanding from the comments maybe take that maybe it's not the case. I just want to clarify that the executive director would be, in effect, the chief executive officer of OWEB and would supervise personnel and
yes.
Would have the final say and yes. Hire, fire, as long as appropriate. due process?
Yes.
Thank you.
Robert Simpson?
Yeah, I would like to see the executive director serve as the president of the board. He looks for the board as their authorized. Basically, the board sets the policy and the executive director carries it out.
Okay. President Mishler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been all over the board myself on this issue with other boards and commissions as well as this. And we've got it in the state, in our departments, we've got all different types of how it's set up. And I think some of them have worked well no matter the structure, and some of them have worked horribly no matter the structure. So it's more of a personality issue than anything else. I think they need to be consistent, ultimately, in the state. We're not there now, by any means. And I think it's probably a better setup if the CEO of the state does have a director working for them. It hasn't worked well in all departments, but I think that's particularly on something like this, is dealing with this kind of money, with these kinds of funds. What you need is someone that's an excellent facilitator of financial matters, and I just think that. Also, I don't want to speak for the governor, but I do know that this is a very, very important issue for the governor's office. Probably, in my opinion, in our discussions, it was probably the most important factor of all the points we've discussed.
President Whitefish.
Thank you. I've, like the co-chair, have been on different sides of this issue, I guess. I believe that as legislators and as a general public, that we have more opportunity to impact the director through the governor than we do the commission, because you're dealing with one person. Forget who's governor, but you're dealing with one person. The other way, you have five, or in some cases, you have seven. And now I've tried that, and some of you others have probably done the same. It's extremely difficult. Now, I'm not saying it's easy with the governor, depending upon probably the political party of the governor versus who you are. But I think that gives us more direction. Gives us more potential to have an impact than when you go through the commission. I have found it extremely difficult trying to get through the director through the commission. Just because of the numbers, it's just tricky numbers rather than there's more anything else.
Representative Johnson and Representative King. I just wanted to back up what Representative Lundquist said. It's been my experience with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and other agencies that if you have the governor in charge, it is easier to make them responsive. And when the commission's in charge, and they've been through both in the Department of Fish and Wildlife over the years, it's my preferred way, the way that Representative Lundquist has stated. And
okay.
Well, so clearly we have a whole bunch of agencies that we want to be to see performing together as a team, and it's kind of hard to have a team play if they all work for someone different. It's a lot easier to get team play when there is the CEO of the state having some direction, and of course to have them cooperate together. And so I think that there is some substance there in terms of having the director be appointed by the governor as versus the president.
So as I'm understanding this, the governor is basically saying he has no problem with this body being independent as long as he can call the shot, which doesn't speak to independence to me. And the reality is, Mr. Co-Chair, that this is nothing against anybody or any person, but the reality is that you have a board that comes in monthly or every other month or whatever to take care of business, the most influential folks there are going to be the folks that are running that agency or department, bar none. So the most influential person here is going to be the executive director, because he is in charge of day-to-day operations. I mean, that happens everywhere, and it's not saying that's good or bad. That's just the reality of it. So it speaks to me that we still don't have balance here. With what is proposed, there is no balance here. There is no way to play off this thing. This is still in the governor's office. We might as well say that, because that hasn't changed in this proposal.
I'm confused. I understand.
note for the record that this is... Here was the choice that came down. Say they're functioning wonderfully or they're not functioning well at all?
No.
So if you want that confirmation, you go together as a point. If you don't want that, so let the board have. Question of balance doesn't count. Governor's downline, which is in the executive branch, the question is, if you want the additional safeguard of Senate confirmation, governor appoints. If you don't care about the additional safeguard, Senate confirmation. Senate member, I offer Senate confirmation, but it's a choice that all the members here on this committee lay in the side.
So if you went the other direction, the commission and the board pick their points.
That's my understanding. I guess the question for us is, what do we do with a particular director? Mm-hmm. Not to like any of them. Serves at the pleasure of the board? That's possible. We've had to. And the virtually accept the governor's appointment. Care about Senate confirmation. I have the additional safeguard of the Senate hearing and the process of synthesis of Senate confirmation. Objection duly noted, Representative Cruz. Thank you. Yes,
if there's a possibility that the person may... I mean, we get it dysfunctional.
I don't think it's illegal. I guess I just have never heard of that process. And I see funny looks coming out of legal.
I don't think you can get that from here.
I think we have two models that are in state government. We simply have to decide which model it is that we think is more efficacious. The governor made a strong argument for the idea that in those cases... Right, and sometimes it doesn't work. Shall we move on? Check writing. And this has came out of the discussions that we have had. DAS, first of all, we need to make sure DAS... In fact, it's an electronic transfer, and they are doing an accounting process, but they are physically never touching any of these dollars. It is an accounting notification that goes back and forth on bank transfers. But everybody agreed from the executive department and the feedback that we got from watershed councils is that when Water Resources Department handles the disbursements, they go out on time. And often when DAS handles disbursements, people end up waiting for checks for a long time, and that is not what we want watershed. Draft reflects Water Resources Department as the check writing entity and DAS is the accounting entity.
Members, I believe that it would be a budget note asking Water Resources Department to basically having DAS contract with Water Resources for the check writing. Mr. Rocco can confirm that for us.
Yeah. Any objections, Representative King?
Not an objection. Just a thought, though. Based on conference with people about maybe 66 supporters, there was concern that maybe we're we might end up handing fish money different than park money, which both comes, you know, from maybe 66. And it might be good to take a look to see where we can have some relatively similar, you know, types of tracks. And I think that we do want to see the Dasher building that, you know, check writer here. But it might be, you know, helpful to note how, you know, how the park side money is processed compared to how we're processing here.
Actually, the Parks Department is in charge of that problem, and the only place where we interface is where those dollars are actually split.
And I'm not saying we should be the same. I was just thinking it might be worth noting.
Take a look at what they're doing over there. And the issue for us is that we've been given the 6535 designations and some other limitations that Parks didn't yet. So, anybody object? Yes, sir.
I'm not sure I understand it completely, but I've been talking to enough people to begin to grasp the idea that when DAS has this money, the way this present draft is written, there's really no requirement that that money end up in OWEB ultimately. I mean, just the way this particular draft is written.
My understanding is that, and maybe Mr. Rocco can help here, but what we need to do is put in statute what will happen and put in the agency budget how it happens. So it would be a matter of us wiring the connections and then making them happen.
But not in this this draft here?
We'll bring Ken Rocco up. I think what we're going to do is make the allocations within this house in the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. Shields, the allocations of the funds would be made in a allocation section that Ways and Means would take care of in this bill. And then the agencies need limitations to spend the money, and that would be provided in their individual budget. The OWEB would have to have a budget, because it's a new state agency, so there would be a budget for OWEB that would give them the authority to spend the lottery funds that would be distributed by the Department of Administrative Services to them. So basically, this will be taken care of in the budget.
I guess I would just appreciate some public input, you know, testimony, particularly around number 8. I just wanted that noted.
It's unthinkable to me that we would create this mechanism and then not move the money directly to the board that would do the granting for application. That's a concern. Assured that that will happen. So we'll do that in statute, or we'll do that when we create the new agency. That authorization will have to be there so that there's no misunderstanding.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think probably the best example of this in current law is the way the state distributes and allocates the general lottery fund, which all of the lottery dollars go to the Department of Administrative Services. The legislature then directs that staff on how they will distribute those funds, and DAS does that. And the same will happen here. The legislature will, this is just a subset of those larger lottery funds. The legislature will allocate those lottery funds, and DAS will distribute them as instructed by the legislature.
Just to respond, you know, I can hear words and comprehend at least part of them, but I did arrive at this process somewhat late, and as I came in here, I would note that I would hear stakeholders and witnesses testifying to various things, and I'm reading the body language of some of those same witnesses and stakeholders in the audience right now, and they don't seem to be agreeing with everything that gets said. So I'm just saying, let's make sure that there's some public input at this point.
We have all of you people with the bad body language just move out of the room, please.
I don't think so.
Uh,
I just wanted to point out that while theoretically gas wouldn't have to transfer the money to anybody, I suppose, neither could they do anything else with it. Because they wouldn't have any expenditure limitations to spend it. And neither would any other agency. Give it to the human resources. But they couldn't. Well, human resources
we could use it.
They couldn't spend it because they wouldn't have the authority to spend it.
Co-Chair Messer.
Right. I think this is kind of a non-issue in a way. Minister, from what I heard, the testimony the last 3 or 4 months was that people really liked the way the funds were handled at Water Resources. I didn't hear any other real concerns that they passed, and it seemed like they're doing it. If we contract with Water Resources, which for a nominal fee,
Mr. Chair, under the GWEB system, since GWEB is an administratively part of the Water Resources Department, there was an intra-fund transfer of revenues that paid for the Water Resources fiscal staff to process checks. And under your working draft in Section 7 on page 7, it gives this new board, OWEB, the authority to enter into interagency agreements, which would facilitate that process of contracting with Water Resources, now that these two entities would be independent, separate agencies.
Out of order, we don't want...
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
If there's no objection, let's move on to... physical or actually the requirements of Measure 66, and that is in fact in number 9, create the Parks and Natural Resources Fund and sub-accounts including the Oregon Plan efforts in the purposes, and find the capital expenditures definition with the understanding that the amendments may be required after the Attorney General's opinion. We think we're narrowing in on something that gives us the right definition. 11 creates a legal fund. Representative Morgan?
On the first page of 20, maybe, for Habitat.
And Representative Morgan, I'd expect you to bring that back when we discuss this draft.
All
right, nip it in the bud. Objection so noted. Representative Thompson.
As long as we're at that point where we're talking about it, I definitely want to
sure that if the wording comes out, that it reflects that this is for salmon, because I keep seeing wording coming out that's talking about a lot of other things and doesn't say salmon habitat, it says habitat. So if she's going to make that comment, I want to make sure to put my 2 bits in.
I have a problem there, Representative Morgan, and I assure you it's related to the way it refers to wildlife habitat. So it isn't just salmon that we're talking about. It is terrestrial and aquatic species.
Where appropriate, though.
And I think what happens is where appropriate will depend on where the committee decides to spend the money, because once we appropriate the money to the committee, they're going to make the decisions. Now, we may, in our oversight role, argue with them about where they spend the money, but it does include wildlife habitat, and so as much as we think this is all about salmon, it's about fish and wildlife. Senator Duke.
I'm just curious as to what native habitat is. Is that habitat that is native to Oregon that is not an invasive species, or is that habitat for native species?
Representative Morgan already has heartburn with the word native, so maybe that's maybe Senator Duke brings the point that we ought to either define it or lose it.
I'm taking it as an adjective.
Okay.
Native habitat is defined? Native is defined.
Colleagues, can I ask you to do one thing with me here? Get to 12. Go with the bullfrog amendment.
We're okay.
Are we there? Okay, good. Now, colleagues, we have before us essentially there are some objections that we've noted for the record. The geographic representations, the org grant making experience, the treaty tribe representation, the confirmation and the gubernatorial appointment. The serving at the pleasure of the governor and at the pleasure of the board, those are connected. Other than that, are there any objections to the concept that we've had discussed in this outline? Senator Nelson?
Not an objection, but I was just wondering, I don't see any definition of purposes or duties of the board. Is that, am I missing something in this whole thing? Or?
And I think there are probably dozens of questions like that, Senator Nelson, and I think we really need to owe it to our folks to go ahead and read the draft.
Sure.
But, Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, you're exactly correct. There are, in fact, three issues that aren't in this working draft that you all need to think about, and we need to incorporate those. As a matter of fact, if we have some discussion on those tonight, Jeanette would continue with the drafting and include those. But one of those certainly is the responsibilities of this new OWEB board. Mainly, you'll see in the dash two amendment, in many of the amendments, you'll see the cleanup, basically, the cleanup language of the current GWEB responsibilities that will transfer to this board. In addition to that, if there are other functions such as coordination and those sorts of things, add those in at that time. The second issue is allowing state and federal agencies to apply for grants if they are co-applicants with watershed councils or stormwater conservation districts. That is a second issue that we'll need to discuss and have Jeanette work into the draft. And last but not least, the legislative findings, which there are two primary versions, one in the dash two and one in the dash five.
And I think we did have consensus on the committee about making sure that applications from state and federal agencies were only acceptable with a co-applicant who is a soil water conservation district or a watershed council. I think that was something that should be discussed at that one. Co-Chair Messerly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to throw one other thought on the table, and that is that I think that we need to think about drafting some kind of language that would be strongly urge or request or something the soil water districts and the watershed associations and some state agencies to work together. Whether we do that by sharing applications, Representative Cruz and I have been kicking that around and working on
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair as well. Jeanette and I have talked about this, and it seems to us that the applications that come to the granting body are a matter of public record. So by staying silent on that issue, it by virtue of open public records laws, anyone would be able to review and comment on any application that
Representative Mitchell's commentary was more
closer coordination between
I guess I would ask if there's any other questions or issues for the membership. And not, I think what we need to do is charge the members of the committee and members of the public that got a distribution of this document, and if we could put this out as far as we can to the 52 other I think we need to charge this group to come back on Thursday ready to look at a drafting a work session. Jeanette, did you want to have any other issues clarified before we
I call a closure on this meeting.
Just a couple of words I guess I would like to remind the committee. This draft that you're looking at tonight is only the, it only includes the issues you've signed on the list on tonight. There are other parts of this draft that you've talked about in your meetings that really need to be in here, like the duties of the Watershed Council, where we've at a minimum, we need to add the language that it expands those duties to Measure 66 because they're going to be dealing with the Measure 66 monies. Some of the cleanup that we have put in by consolidating some of the GWEB statutes where we've had duplication in the statutes, those need to be in here. And there needs to be additional boilerplate transition language that transfers the books and records of the GWEB to the OWEB. That kind of additional language, I would hope, can be in your draft for Thursday. So as you look at this, remember that you're only seeing the real crucial issues that you've discussed tonight. And it's my intent to add those other pieces before you meet again.
I guess I would request that as you add those pieces into the draft, that you also have them printed as separate paragraphs so that we can see, in fact, those things have been added in, and insert a sheet so that there's a place where we can actually physically see an addition that wasn't previously considered. Attention to those things, but like them in the body of the draft that we see so that people both can identify and to see how they integrate into the whole document.
I'll do what I can.
I'm becoming concerned because this is going to be a pretty in-depth document, I would think, in probably several pages. And I'm concerned about when you would, whether you can get that to us in time that we have a chance to really go through it. I would guess that we should have it by 3 o'clock in the afternoon if it's going to be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meserly, if you want an official gone all the way through our publication services, no, we can't. If you want another draft like you have tonight with the additional, I probably can do that by 3.
If we're going to have a meaningful job on Thursday, we at least need to have that much time.
Mr. Chair, the only caveat I would add is that if you do a work draft on Thursday, you need to adopt it. You would need to adopt it as a conceptual amendment, and then with the expectation that the final document will be through our publication services and have a different number.
Okay. Everybody understand the process? Any further questions from the committee? Or
no questions, Mr. Chair. I have some concerns, certainly, and I've probably voiced a few of them. I'm trying to get over this shy period I've been going through. in some ways, you know, Dash 1000, I know, is a work in progress. In some ways, it's almost like we've gone backwards. And the one shame that has not really been dealt with in any of these. I mean, we're dealing with the top-end part of this. We're not putting the lower end. I know there's other ways to do that, but I do think we need something in that document dealing with what's on the ground. And I also want to point out, we keep running across, and it's on page 1, line 20, Native Habitat. Native Habitat is not in Measure 66. Native fish, native salmonid, several other native whatevers is in there, but in nowhere have I ever read Native Habitat in Measure 66, and Native Habitat bothers me. And so if you wanted to put it in Native fish, I would have no problem with that, but habitat, Native Habitat is a really narrowly defining concept, and I would like to see that removed.
Representative Lennon.
Well, if you look at the definition of native on page 2, line 6, clearly native is talking about fish that are indigenous to Oregon. And so all native habitat is saying is fish that are indigenous to Oregon habitat.
No. Native habitat is a whole bigger concept. And so if I'm doing a stream restoration project and I bring in some plants that aren't native to Oregon because they're going to hold the riverbank, I'm out of compliance with this definition.
President King?
I'm going to have to disagree with Representative Lund and agree with Representative Cruz. I think Representative Cruz has a
good point. Wait a minute. Hold on here. We have a caucus. Yeah, absolutely. Right after the gavel.
And we're learning from the Republic. You disagree.
And I believe that I read today in ODF&W materials that the native fish for ODF&W is a species that was indigenous to Oregon and naturally surviving prior to the year 1800. And so I think that, you know, we could open ourselves up a lot more if we're dealing with native habitats. That's a lot of other territory.
Jeanette, did you want to defend your professional reputation here? Or?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to do what I've learned at 18 years here. I'm going to blame it on someone else.
Yes, ma'am.
This language came from the Attorney General's office. My impression was that he was trying to match up to the constitutional provision, so that maybe on the other side, I will check it with him and let you know on Thursday.
Is there a consensus about concern over the word native? Do I see anybody with an objection to the concern?
I have a mic condition of ripping out all the Scotch green in the state.
You take care of the gorge.
It's possible if it doesn't conflict. You absolutely could use the word native on the habitat references. Russian Jensen?
Wildlife habitat. I don't think it talks about native.
Richard Martin, do you have any other questions? Any other member of the committee have questions? Richard Lundquist?
So to understand the process, we really haven't gone through the document tonight. We're going to do that Thursday.
Representative, do you have a working draft that has the that reflects the 12 concepts that the co-chair has brought forward from our meetings with the governor's office and the direction? That's all you've got. So we will see an expanded draft on Thursday that, if at all humanly possible, would be potentially adoptable as an amendment in concept to get us down the road on this track. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, for someplace in here tonight that we don't necessarily agree with the draft. We just wait and Thursday we'll talk about that. Because that will not have anything to do, it's not one of the principles we're talking about here, it's another issue. But I'm just trying to follow the process.
Representative, if you took this draft home, you read it line by line, you probably would be reading 98% to 99% of the language that you'll see Thursday on the same page as on the same reference, but there will be additional information on security that has to do with expanding and including the duties and measures for the committee, eliminating statutes, and then providing transition language. So there will be three additional components. Probably will be looking for very much the same language you've got in your hand now. In other words, I don't think it'd be a waste of time to read and mark the schedule.
Okay. That's my point, is that there may be issues here tonight that they'll be. If they're wrong now in somebody's mind, they're going to be wrong in the draft.
Exactly.
Thank you. Since I'm going to be chairing Thursday's meeting, I would hope that if someone's got a real red flag they see, that throw it out and let you not know about it.
Well, because that was my question. Do you raise it or do you not raise it?
Raise it by all means. Referencing.
My red flag would be to have the sound guy up at 7.
Sound guy, if you're here at 7, Steve, can you talk to the sound guy, please?
Okay. If you want one more red flag, I could certainly do that. And it's on the last page, and I know it's the way things currently are when a person who is serving on a commission, when their time is up, they continue serving until a replacement is found. I know that's the way it's done everywhere. I've had a problem with the way it's done everywhere, and I would like to find some way to put some time certain into replacement. And if we start here, then we can take it across the universe. But you know, we've had people that have served on boards and commissions 4 and 5 years after their second term was up, and they should have been off, but they were never replaced, so they just stayed. And I have a real problem with that. I've had a problem for years. Maybe this is the place to start correcting that.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. Judith, do we have an answer for Representative Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cruz, yes, indeed. In this draft, on page 9, it says that the governor shall appoint the OWEB board not later than October 1st, 1999, and they will then be subject to Senate confirmation and begin their service the first day of the month following the Senate confirmation.
I'm not arguing with that. I'm talking about replacing people after that's been done, and it's on the last page, and it's basically what is in the language is the same process we use everywhere, and I've had a problem with it always, and I would like to see if we can find a solution to put in time certain into the replacement process.
Sure. Mr. Chair. Before we leave this issue, Representative Cruz, that issue's been knocking around the building since the
on some earlier and I think there is
got to be answered. I understand there's litigation being filed on that.
Okay.
Let's look at the issue. Let's draft language that deals with the issue, or at least be more of a discussion in terms of how a person is removed from the office of the issue. Sure.
Mr. Leonard.
I have a problem with that. That is a method by which government is shut down.
And if there are problems with the question and the potential,
I think the solution is that until there's, I mean, it isn't that the governor doesn't appoint, it's that the individual isn't confirmed is a more accurate description of the problem that we've had. And the problem then becomes more of a stalemate between the legislative and the executive, and we have the potential for government to shut down. So the reason people stay on is to continue working in the capacity they were working on until the Senate confirms their replacement.
Representative Leonard, I think you're exactly right, and I think there are three issues here. One is the language in the Constitution that allows the Senate. Another is the section that allows for appointment by the governor. And the third, an ambiguous connector, is what happens when the governor makes an appointment and the Senate does not confirm, and the language piece that's missing is that in some of our boards and commissions, the language that created the commissioner board says that the person will serve until the new commission is confirmed. The fact is, you go forever, even though the Senate's acted and the governor's acted, you don't have resolution. And that, I think, is going to be the topic of litigation because there is ambiguity about what happens next. Was there another question or issue? But I do understand the concern is registered and the possible solutions are also a concern.
Representative
Lentz, did you want to read that?
Yes. On Section 7, it talks about the director on behalf of the board may enter into interagency agreements necessary to carry out the duties and responsibilities of the board. I don't have any real heartburn like that with that if we have some sort of a parameters around that, I guess. But interagency agreements can be very broad. And if it's along the technical, framework, it's okay, but I don't know how the exact, verbiage to put in there, but it does create, in my mind, a pretty wide open arena.
Well, Representative, in the example that we talked about earlier, it would be
after a lot of resources for a contract to do the check writing, but it could be much broader. There are no, in this, as I just glanced at it, I don't see any limiting factors. I suppose the limiting factor would be that it would have to be connected to the grant writing and grant application processing and the grant coordination in Measure 66. You wouldn't think that this agency is free to contract for any purpose under the sun, not related to its function as a watershed enhancement. But I don't see the limiting language, so I guess I would ask Council to come back and be able to answer a referendum of one quick question. Does there need to be some limiting language in here?
Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? I would expect that this is not a perfect document.
I would also expect that there would be a conceptual and possibly even draft amendments that we'd be looking at before we get to the end of this process.
But I would urge that the committee members understand that we're under possible constraints of time, that we need to move through the process as quickly as we can from here out.
I'll also commend the committee members. There's a tremendous amount of acceptance and buy-off for the concept that we've gotten so far. I mean, there's a lot of information here, and we've moved a long way. So I think we've done a good piece of work. I think we've also gotten a major piece of coordination with the governor's staff and office about what has to happen. Now the issue is how do we move forward to a bill that we can accept and have as large a possible vote for as we possibly can. And let me suggest that we remember the Oregon plan moved out of both of our houses with our 89 votes for the Oregon plan. And if we really do our job to create something that isn't partisan, that does last, that we would get as close to that kind of account as we possibly can. And that, I think, is a better challenge for the committee, because that sends a message not only the National Marine Fisheries Service, but to watershed councils and saltwater conservation districts about the level of commitment of this body to salmon restoration. So let's try and close on these issues. Further questions? Seeing none, we are in adjournment.
Yeah.